Talk with Maria Bailey. Join Maria as she takes on topics important to you. From the cradle to college, Maria and her expert guests offer information, tips, and tools to make the busy lives of families easier. Now, here's your host, Maria Bailey.
Can you believe that it's August and some kids are already back to school? It seems like yesterday we were talking about getting our kids out of school, and now here they are back to school. And if you're a mom of a young child, you're going through the anxiety of getting them back in. If you're a mom of a college-age student, you're going through the anxiety of getting back in. That's basically it. I was just saying to a friend of mine that I'm actually this week going to drive 20 hours from Florida to South Bend, Indiana, to move my daughter into her college apartment. And so there you go. Moms of toddlers, it never ends. Like, no matter if they start into their 20s, you're still helping them and doing all those nurturing things that we quite honestly love to do. I mean, do you know any mom that would say to you, gosh, you know what? I don't like nurturing my children and I don't love feeling needed. Nobody would. There's no mom that doesn't want to feel needed by her kids. It's just the challenge is that you have to know when it's okay to let them do it on their own. And that's a lesson that I feel like I am still learning even today as the mom of four kids. But guess what? We can learn it together here on Mom Talk Radio as we spend the next, 48 minutes or so talking about the things that are important to you and important to me. And today we're going to be talking with everyone from a dedicated philanthropist and mom who is doing pretty amazing things to a radio talk show host like myself, a mom out in Oregon who's putting her voice on air, to a mom of twins and an author. So we've got a lot of really exciting guests, and those guests in Mom Talk Radio are brought to you by Premama. Drinkpremama.com is their website. And if you are a mom, whether you are thinking about a mom and you're looking into infertility and prenatal vitamins, or you are a new mom and you're looking for health around lactation, Drink Premama, it has it all for you. It's available at CVS, Target, Amazon, and specialty stores. And you can go to drinkpremama.com. The thing about Premama is that none of their supplements or vitamins or nutrients are in pill form. They're actually in a flavorless powder that you can mix with your juice, your smoothie, and get all the nutrients you want without gagging on those horrid horse pills. So drinkpremama.com brings you Mom Talk Radio every week, and I'm super excited about that. So did you guys know that the average mom spends over $450 moving her kids into a college dorm? I would be victim of that this week, and I'm going to have some great stories. You can actually follow me online. If you go to my Facebook page, Maria Bailey, you can follow me online, where next week I'm actually going to take a road trip to six different college campuses and talk to moms about moving their kids into college. So follow me on Twitter. You can go to College Move In, hashtag College Move In, and you'll find me there. And you can follow me as I drive across the United States. I hope that you'll follow me to our next guest, because when we return, we have Florence Ann Romano. She's a dedicated philanthropist and former nanny who always has had a special place in her heart for children, and she's going to share some of her experiences with us on Mom Talk Radio.
Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio.
So our next guest has a lot of experience with children. She is known as Nanny. She has the flair of nanny magic, and her name is Florence Ann Romano. She's a dedicated philanthropist and a former nanny who has more than 15 years working with children, beginning as a mommy's helper at the age of 11. She shares her experiences in a book called Nanny and Me, and it's beautifully illustrated. She raised her own children outside of Chicago, and she's joining us here on Mom Talk Radio. So, hi, Florence, and welcome to our show.
Hi, Maria. Thank you for having me.
So, tell me a little bit about your book. What will moms find in there?
Nanny and Me really was written on my heart before I actually put pen to paper. And when I started looking at the children's book market out there, I noticed something was missing. There was nothing out there for children to understand what happens when their parents go to work and who stays home with them. And in today's world, more than 60% of families in America have a nanny, if you can believe it or not. And so I felt that it was a huge disservice to these children not to have something to use as a tool to understand what can be a traumatizing experience for them. Children need to understand why someone else other than their parents are taking care of them. And they ask themselves a lot of questions about why someone else is taking care of them. Perhaps, you know, they feel in their minds it's because mom or dad don't love me, or they're comparing themselves to other children that they see at school. That's always the worst thing kids can do, is compare themselves to other children. So I felt that Nanny and Me needed to speak from the child's perspective to help children through the transition, and then also be able to help parents use it as a tool before the transition happens so they can have that conversation with their child.
That's a pretty ingenious book there. But now you are turning your attention to children with special needs and most importantly, autism, correct?
My brother is autistic. He is 29 years old now, actually. And so I grew up just being 17 months apart. I'm his older sister. But it was always an important piece of my family. And when I look at families today, there are a lot of different situations that family have. There are special needs across the board, whether that's autism, ADD, ADHD, and even family dynamics that are different than the traditional family dynamics, same-sex marriage. There are a lot of different things to consider now in the family home, and a nanny needs to understand these differences before entering that home and taking on those family values.
And so what in particular does the nannies need to know about, like, a child's daily and nightly routine? And I think probably some of this knowledge could be important to parents as well, right?
Absolutely. Right now I'm working on my second book, which is titled Nanny Magic. And in that book, I discuss how a family needs to make this decision about having a nanny, how you correctly interview a nanny, what are the values of your family that you're looking to be reflected in that nanny. So when you're actually going through this evaluation process of, is this the right nanny for me? You need to consult your conscience. You need to consult your family. You need to understand what extensions of yourself you want this nanny to be. And that comes down to a lot of different things. It could be discipline. It could be bedtime routines, like you mentioned. But everyone needs to be on the same page. And I always tell parents, when you're interviewing a potential nanny, you have to say this to yourself: if we don't agree, it's not for me. And you need to move on to the next candidate, because there is going to be someone else out there that does the right thing by your family and does share your family values. But if you don't agree, you really shouldn't bring that family that nanny into the home.
Yeah, that's really important, because it's true. I've had a couple of nannies, and when you bend on certain things, but when it comes to the values of your family, you just can't really bend on that. And eventually, even if you think, oh, it's not going to matter now, it eventually catches up to you, and it does.
And that's an important point, Maria, because, you know, what I've been exploring, especially with this second book, is what happens to these children? What are the ramifications of having a nanny in their life? And does the nanny take seriously the idea that they have to be a role model for the children? I think that's completely lost in the world today, that nannies need to be good role models for the children, be an extension of the parents, that they're going to be the next best thing when you're not there. And when you're looking at a potential nanny to join your family, you're right. You don't want to cut corners on the things that are important to you, because those little things do add up. And you have to think about the most important person in the equation. That's your child or your children. And what's going to be the influence of that nanny on your children?
What about, so I'm going to plead guilty to this one. You just said, you know, a replacement or something that's close to the next best thing to the mom. Mm-hmm. There is some nanny envy that goes on. Like, I mean, there were moments when I didn't like how close my nanny was to my children. How do you deal with that?
It is so common, and I have seen it firsthand where, you know, moms, you know, they can get a little bit of jealousy, and that's okay. We're human. We have emotion. We, you know, that's okay. You don't want to minimize that. But the important thing, and I've told many moms this, to remember when you have those feelings kind of creep in, you want to look at that nanny kind of like an aunt or a godparent. If you can put the nanny in that light, kind of shift it and frame it that way, wouldn't you always hope that your children had a great relationship with their aunt or their uncle or their cousin or someone in their family that, you know, isn't their parent, but someone that is just as present, just as beautiful and influence on them? If you can start thinking of your nanny that way, as a godparent or an aunt or uncle, then that's going to help minimize that guilt for you or that jealousy for you, because that's a great gift to give to your child, to be able to develop those relationships with other people that are going to love them and influence them.
That's a good point, because you tend to figure out how to work through it. It's just one of those challenges. We only have a minute left, so I want to get this in there. You have a website, FlorenceAnnRomano.com. And we have a link on Mom Talk Radio, but can you, in 60 seconds or less, so just let us know what we'd find there?
I would love to interact with any of my listeners or anyone that has a copy of Nanny and Me or just wants to learn more about the nanny world. And if I get emails all the time from people asking for advice on what to do and how to navigate, and I love to hear from everyone. So you'll find my email address and also my Facebook page, Florence Ann Romano Author.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. And we have a link to you on Mom Talk Radio. So thanks so much. We'll send people over to your website. When we return, we're going to speak with one mom who's actually a morning show host at Cricket Country out in Oregon. So I'm super excited to turn the spotlight on one mom today on our Spotlight on Mom segment, to a mom who actually is a morning show host at Cricket Country, KRKT, in Oregon. And she has four children. Her name is Angela, and I want to welcome Angela to Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Angela.
Thank you so much. This is, I'm very nervous, even though I do this every day. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. You're not nervous. I think it's harder to have four kids, isn't it?
Yes, most definitely, yes. We've got our routines, so we have it, you know, as long as we stick to the routines for the most part, then we can get through a day without any major meltdowns.
So you kind of have a focus in your family about making memories with your kids. Out of all of the focus, like in my family, I guess maybe it's a little bit close to that. Like travel was like our focus. So why did you pick that particular focus?
You know, my husband and I, we've talked about how we grew up, and we've talked about things like his trip to Disneyland that his mom took him and his sister on. And I said, now, is that your best memory from childhood? And he said, no, it's not even in the top 10. You know, I mean, our best memories from childhood are so much, at the time, to our parents, maybe seemed way less significant, but they're the things we remember the most. And so, I mean, it feels like yesterday that I was a child, and now I'm 39 years old, and so I can remember things so vividly that I enjoyed with my parents, and they were the small things. Like, one of my earliest memories is playing Go Fish on the living room floor with my mom, and I was maybe 3 years old, and I recognized, I've got a 10-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 1-year-old, and I recognized that, like, the 4-year-old maybe hasn't had his first memory yet, or maybe he has, but I just want to make sure it's a good one. I don't want it to be something traumatizing.
That is a really good point, that when you think of your first memory, it's not often where we put the effort. I don't know why, but I always remember watching Woody the Woodpecker on Saturday mornings before my mom took me to my ballet class. I have no idea why, But when I think of Saturday mornings, that's what I think of. If you knew what your children were going to hold near and dear to them for the rest of your life, you'd probably focus more on that than you do on probably the silly stuff that takes you the most effort out of your busy day. Do you know what I mean? Like the laundry, for instance, or I don't know, or writing notes in your lunchbox. I'm sure that my mother did that, but I don't even remember it, probably because I was so busy trying to, you know, trade my dill pickle for a little Debbie Swiss roll, right? So, I mean, I wonder how you can do that.
It's just a daily, it's just the little things that add up. And I mean, that sounds so cliche, but I just try to, I lose it sometimes with them because I have four and I have a temper sometimes. And so I do lose it, but I just try to make sure the majority of their day is filled with me being kind to them and being understanding with them. And it's like you said, you don't know what they're going to take with them to adulthood. All I can go on is what I remember from my childhood. And like I said, it's the littler things. It wasn't any of the big extravagant things that mom and dad put a lot of effort into. I mean, I may remember that, but what if when my kids get to adulthood and I say to them, oh, do you remember those sweet little notes I wrote to you in your lunchbox? And they say, no, don't remember that at all. Then, you know, my feelings might get hurt. So I just kind of try to bombard them daily with lots of little things that show how much I love them.
You can just hear it in your passion for your kids. I love that discussion. And I think that you and I have challenged people to like just take a step back and think about what meant the most in your life growing up. And I bet you that you might shift your priorities tomorrow. I asked one of my college kids recently, hey, you know, tell me about your childhood. And I thought that I was a disciplinarian the whole time growing up. And they're like, oh, no, Mom, you were like the pushover. We had fun with you. And I was like, wow, I completely thought I had done a different thing, but who knows? Moms can find you online at krkt.com and on Twitter at Cricket Country. So, Angela, thank you for sharing some of your day with us and coming back on the radio with us. That is a great exercise. Take a step back and think about what meant the most to you growing up. And do you try to recreate those same things with your own child? I mean, I remember my mom reading to me on the couch and coloring in coloring books. And that was probably just little things that she didn't even realize she was doing to make an impact in my life. So there you have it. So when we return, we are going to talk with a mom and a therapist who did something pretty amazing. She adopted twin boys.
You succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
So I am excited to have on Mom Talk Radio a mom who has done some pretty amazing things in all areas of her life, including being a mompreneur and being the mom of twin boys and being a therapist. She's like done a lot of really amazing things. And she is Brenda Lee Roberts. She joins us as a former therapist and of a mom who actually adopted twin sons at birth. And in the 2 years following their birth, it came clear that they needed one of them needed to stay home and one of them needed to go back to work. And so I will let her tell you the rest of the story, but I want to welcome Brenda to Mom Talk Radio. So hi, Brenda.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, so how did that story end with one of you wanting to go back to work and one of you wanting to stay home? Tell me the rest of the story there.
Yeah, you know, twins are an interesting process because when one of them gets sick, both of them get sick. And
it
never seemed to happen at the opportune time, of course. So it was just decided that one of us who actually, you know, made the least amount of income would be the one that stayed at home. And so I chose to do that willingly. I was very happy to be a stay-at-home mom. And just over the course of taking them out and about and running errands and day in and day out, whether it's winter time or summertime, I ran across several scenarios that became very frustrating to me, which was no changing station, or the ones that were there were things that, you know, I just wouldn't put my child on. So we talked about it and decided, you know, there's got to be something different.
And so you created the Baby Change and Go, which actually got you some attention from, or you, there was some interaction with Ashton Kutcher, right?
Well, we didn't personally interact with him. What happened was, is when we reached our breaking point as far as running across this over and over, we were at a home and garden show at a convention center. It was a family event. It was a family expo. We went to Change Your Boys, and there was nothing. So we ended up having to change them on the concrete floor. And so we went to lunch afterwards, and we were like, you know, there's got to be something out there. So we looked online and couldn't find anything, and we were like, well, what is it that we're looking for? And the main thing we wanted was something that you didn't require you laying something somewhere and then taking that something and putting it back in your diaper bag next to your bottle and the chew toys and clothes. So we decided, you know, to draw something up, and we drew that up and stuck it in our bag and got home and said, yeah, that's a pretty cool idea, but stay-at-home mom now, one-income family, that's not going to happen as far as, you know, creating something. And we knew that starting a business and all that was a big deal, so we just kind of put it in a drawer. And then several months later, that was in October, in March of 2015, Ashton Kutcher got really upset about there not being changing stations in men's restroom, and so he really went public with it, and we read the articles and saw the social media that he had posted and said, you know, I think the universe is telling us we need to do something with that something that we drew. So we pulled it out of the drawer and got busy.
And so the idea is that it actually, the baby change and go, it hangs from, it's like a hammock, right?
It is. It hangs from a public bathroom stall door or stall wall. It opens up like a hammock. You lay the baby in it. You change their diaper, and then it folds back up to fit in your diaper bag.
And so how so you're going to do a Kickstarter campaign, and how are you launching the product?
We did the Kickstarter campaign. It ended on June 30th. We did not fund as we wanted to. However, we gathered a lot of information about the people that were interested in the product. Our next big event is the ABC Expo, the All Baby Child Expo, in October, and that is where we will actually have product in hand. We've already, even though the Kickstarter didn't fund, we continued to move forward with manufacturing the product. We just actually got our sample in the mail from the manufacturer yesterday, and it looks fantastic. So we're going to move forward with placing an order. We'll have those in hand by mid-October at the ABC Expo, and that's our big reveal when we start putting it on retail.
Well, it's very, very, very cool. So do you know what it's going to retail for?
It is our goal to have it under $100.
Awesome.
Our hope is $89.99. Unfortunately, you know, we really tried hard to make a product in America. That was one of the first things on our list, was we want to make it in America. And unfortunately, the cost per goods just would not allow us to do that and be able to take it to the market for under $100.
Right.
How did
you learn how to do this? Because a lot of moms have really great ideas, but we just don't know how to take them from that piece of paper that you had into the marketplace. How did you learn all of that?
It has been a fast and furious learning experience, especially for me. My significant other is a VP controller of finance at a large business in Richmond and knows all the ins and outs of business, but didn't know the ins and outs of starting a business. And, of course, I knew nothing about it. I was a therapist by trade, working with high-conflict divorce couples. So, you know, big switch. So it really was, okay, I bought a book about value proposition, and I read it. And I bought a book about business plans, and I read it. And, you know, just really began educating myself about really what are the steps to take a product to market. And okay, what do I need for the next step? And I kept an Excel spreadsheet, which was new for me, of what's my next step? And I, you know, just kind of planned it out and then just started knocking, you know, doing the tick marks off of what to do. And it's time-consuming. It's frustrating at times. It's depending a lot on people that have gone there and have been successful.
It sounds like that you are on your way to success. I mean, it's a great looking product. You can go to babychangeandgo.com and really awesome product, Brenda. And we're looking forward to seeing it everywhere. And good luck. It's always encouraging to see a mom take an idea and actually go for it. And you definitely are doing it here. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. And keep your eye out for it. Right now you can pre-order it online at the $89.99 price. And you should see it on the shelves in October.
Well, great. Well, good luck and congratulations, Brenda. You know, there's so many moms out there. We have really great ideas. And we need to go for it. What are we teaching our children to do but to go for it? So when we return, we got another mom that went for it and wrote a book called Navigating Life, Things I Wish My Mother Had Told Me.
The number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
Did you ever think about Things I Wish My Mom Had Told Me? Well, Margot Bergen has written the book. It's called Navigating Life, Things I Wish My Mom Had Told Me. And she spent 20 plus years raising three children and working all over the world for large and small institutions focused on international development and women's leadership. So she's got a wealth of knowledge packed into that book. And we have her here on Mom Talk Radio today. So welcome, Margot, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you so much, Maria, for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
You know, recently one of my children moved out on his own and his employer has him living in a hotel room. And he called me, or he texted me actually, and said, "Mom, I wish you had told me that when you use a hotel phone and call long distance, that you have to pay long distance charges."
Of course.
Now, why and when would I have had the occasion to teach him that long distance applies to a hotel phone? Like, I mean, I would never use one, and neither would a millennial, you know. But anyways, it was one of those funny moments when I thought to myself, what else did I neglect to teach them before I sent them out on their own? But what spurred this book for you?
Well, I think it was spurred in two ways. One was sort of an element of desperation, you know, waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning, looking at the ceiling, what the Romans call the watch. You know, that time between, you know, sunset and sunrise, and a lot of, you know, quite dramatic things that happened to me and to my family, everything across the spectrum of sort of addiction and illness and death and job loss and divorce. And I literally woke up and said to myself, why on earth didn't my parents tell me how to deal with all of this? And, of course, you know, in a sense, it wasn't my parents' responsibility to tell me about every dreadful thing that was going to happen to me. But it spurred the idea that perhaps I could help Charlotte, to whom the book is dedicated, and her two siblings to kind of survive life. And so in a sense, it was sort of a rearguard action to sort of put down on paper how to deal with, you know, quite dramatic events, which I started writing to her when she was, I think, 9 and a half. The book, over the 10 years of writing it, turned into, thankfully, something a little less desperate and I hope a little bit more positive, which is after my life had stabilized and I had repartnered and I got a new job and my father, you know, eventually died, I started looking at how to thrive in life and how to sort of try and approach life with a sort of a meaningful intention, and also write that down for Charlotte too. So the book, in a sense, has changed from writing to a 9-year-old to writing to somebody who is just about to leave for college. And that's why when you read the book, you'll see things that are of interest to perhaps a younger daughter and then to somebody who's an emerging young woman about to go into the world.
So what do you think, is there one particular lesson that you think was the most important for your daughter?
Can I ask you, can I answer that with the reverse of that? Because I think
yes.
The most important lesson for her and for me was that she did not need the book. What she needed was me. And this comes out of the fact that 2.5 years after I gave her the book, which she read and likes, you know how children are, they're not going to give you the response that you want. She wrote me an email, and the subject line was, "Mum, do you remember the book?" And then the email said, "You know that book you gave me when I went to college? Well, I lost it. Do you think you could send it to me again?" And it was the day that I'd sent her sister her book, because there are actually three books, because each child should be treated equally. And so what I realized was the biggest lesson for both of us was actually my presence. The words on the page were wonderful. I hope that they will, you know, still inspire her in 10 and 15 and 20 years. But the really big lesson was that I had to be present for her, and she wanted me to be present for her as well. So it was a mutual learning, in a sense. It wasn't something specific. It was just that my behavior, my presence, counted more than anything.
You know, I love that, because so often on the show, we'll talk about the importance of being present. And I always talk about something that was very difficult for me, and that was I had to actually learn how to physically be present with my children, and that is look them in the whites of their eyes. I had to learn how to do that, and I had to practice it daily when I spoke to them, because I had three babies under the age of two, and there was always chaos going on in our house. So I love the fact that being present is the number one, I guess, you know, takeaway from all of that.
Well, it was something I really had to learn for myself.
For all moms, it's so easy for us to go through the routine of being a mom, but it's much more difficult for us to be present with our children and the people around us.
Yeah,
I think it's easy to go through the routine and check the things off the task list, but to actually stop and connect is a very difficult thing.
Yeah, and actually the way that we connected was we often used to go for walks together, and we're both big readers. So we would sort of walk and talk, and occasionally, or we would drive, and without the constant eye contact and the ability to just be together, but not looking totally at each other, but perhaps holding hands sometimes, out would come the most marvelous and unnerving questions that she would, you know, just sort of, you know, would be evoked from putting aside particular time for her, which, you know, sort of like you, I had three in 4 years.
Right.
And, you know, as I always say,
it's a beautiful book, and I want to make sure everybody, before I have to say goodbye, knows where to find it. So Margot has a website, margobergen.com, and it's margaugexbergen.com, or more easily go to momtalkradio.com, where you'll find a link to it. Thank you, Margot, so much for sharing those very enlightening and heartwarming stories with us today on Mom Talk Radio. And when we return, we're going to reach back into the archives for one of my favorite segments. Excited about our next guest. She's done a lot with a lot of really great young vocalists over the last 24 years. Her name is Linda Septien, and she is the CEO of Septien Entertainment. They have a studio and training programs in Dallas and LA. She's produced some incredible artists, and she's here to talk to us a little bit about music and playing an instrument and singing and what that can do for your children. So welcome, Linda, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for letting me be on. And you're asking me my favorite subject, so I'm all excited.
Confession here. I'm one of those parents that I have four children. Three of them were like the academic type. And then came this dramatic youngest child that does nothing but sing and dance, and she would much rather be on a stage performing. So when we discover a child like that, what do we do with her?
Well, first of all, is she not equally or much more smart than the rest?
She is. Her talents are in different places. Let's say it that way. Okay. And she is as smart. She's just smarter in different areas. You know how to sit down and study with a child. I can't even read music. That's my point. It's not what we, I think, naturally learn how to foster.
Right. Well, I always know when someone's an entertainment kid, right? Because when they come into to my offices, they immediately say, "Linda, can I perform for you?" You know, and I'm like, "Whoa!" And they're like 4 years old, and so it's funny. And then I can't, of course, get them to stop, and so I start laughing because that's just an entertainer's personality. I mean, they're obviously the studies, you know, probably some of them, but they are very right-brained humans, and so we have to accommodate their method of learning. And I think that's probably how we got on the talent code and all of those things, because we examine how each child or each adult, we teach adults too, but how they learn. And then we go after that, right? We go after, well, this is, we got them, because I'm better off teaching an ADHD or ADD child than I am a child that is very calm, because I can get more of an artist heart out of them, and their fans will engage faster. So we look for that. Although we do have, you know, children who are very, very disciplined, that we teach then how to be on stage, how to engage their audiences.
I'll be honest with you. I'm never one of those people that says my child has talent or doesn't. So if you do have a child that comes to you and says, "Okay, Mom, this is what I want to do. I want to sing for a living." How do you even know if they have talent? And what do you do from that point on to help them grow?
We believe talent is grown, not born. And it is, because talent is so tough. When you learn anything from tennis on, you learn it by replication. And of course, our mantra is practice makes permanent. And you have to make those mistakes in order for your brain to trigger what is correct also. And if you keep saying, "Whoops, that didn't work," and then you go back to, "Let's try this," and you keep doing it till sufficient myelin has encapsulated all the neural endings, then it will lock in that 10,000 hours that we talk about all the time. And so that's how our entire programs are done. So back to your question, how do we know if they're talented? We don't. We have to work with them, because talent is a multiple of thoughts, ideas, impressions of the brain, how the child was raised, if it's from a stressful home or non-stressful, because that causes a lot of situations that we have to work with. And a lot of our talented kids sometimes do come from different facts of life, different backgrounds, different social things. I mean, it's tough. But you know what? When we find out that that they're talented, is that you keep working with them and they have this drive, like you're talking about your daughter. Right. They have a drive that you can't even imagine.
You have so many resources and so many offerings. Where can our moms go to find out more about what you're doing?
The SEPTN group.com, or they can just look up my name and the SEPTN and it will come up on, you know, a lot of different blogs and different things. That'd be great.
SEPTIEN. For those of you who are interested, check out the website. I've been to it. Great resources. And thank you, Linda, so much for being with us. And thank you for being with us as we go into the back to school season. We're going to try to give you as many survival tips as we can. And the first one is to go to Twitter and tweet me your questions, and we'll provide you the facts and the tips that are relevant to you. Thanks, everyone, for keeping me on the air for 20 years. And we're into the 21st back to school season as Mom Talk Radio says goodbye for this week, and we'll talk to you soon.